the great detectives of old time radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, bringing you another exciting episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know about something I found. For those of you who are fans of radio drama, I located an online radio station for the BBC. It's called BBC Radio 7. And at Radio 7, you can play a wide variety of different radio shows. They're released on a regular basis, and they are available for 7 days after release. And you can just listen to them on the website. Of course, they're not all necessarily family-friendly, so listener discretion is advised, but it's a nice resource. I'll include it in the show notes, but you can find it on Google as well just by searching for BBC Radio 7, a wide variety of different programs. All right, well, let me go ahead and we will get into today's comments. Hey, Adam, love the new show. I was listening to the Charles Russell episode of the Milford Brooks III matter, and I had a question. Did Bob Bailey play Milford Brooks III? It sure sounded like him. It sounded to me like there were two Johnny Dollars. Keep up the good work. Thanks a lot, Lance. As far as I know, I would answer no. It didn't sound like that to me. And in addition to that, Dennis at the Digital Deli, he's got a definitive radiography on a lot of these stars, and he does not have that as a Bob Bailey credit. Bob Bailey's first appearance on Johnny Dollar was in the starring role in 1955. It can be kind of tough when you're listening to unfamiliar voice actors in a show that doesn't list the stars. So, in the credits at the end, like the later Johnny Dollar episodes do. But no, I don't believe Bob Bailey was in that. In addition, at the time, he was working for the Don Lee Mutual Network, so I'm not certain how that would have worked. And yeah, I would lean towards that not being the case, particularly since he was the lead on another detective show. It'd be kind of weird to go over and help CBS getting a competing show started. So, yeah, I would lean towards no on that. He also says he likes the new theme music. It's sort of a techno-noir sound. Well, thanks. And as I mentioned before, that actually came from an episode of Pat Novak for Hire. Anyway, we did get a comment on Podcast Alley that added some insight to last week's episode of Box 13. Statlander writes, "This host tries hard, but sometimes he misses the point. For example, the funny thing about the Box 13, with the humor directed at the short detective, is the fact that Alan Ladd was himself short. He hid this by appearing on the screen with very short co-starters. Veronica Late was less than 5 feet tall. Is he spreading himself too thin? Perhaps." No, it's not too thin. It was just that I was a little short of information. I'd actually read that, I think, that fact about Ladd's height, and I had forgotten it. But yeah, that does make sense, and I looked it up. Alan Ladd was 5'5" tall. And that kind of makes raises some interesting questions as to whether early television was perhaps a little more superficial than early movies. Because you think about it, Alan Ladd was 5'5", which is fairly short, had a great career in films. Humphrey Bogart, of course, was 5'8". He wore some ridiculous shoes, but he was still about to get up to 5'10", but he was still 5'8". And Bob Bailey was 5'9", and couldn't make it on TV. So it's kind of like, were they more superficial on television about the height thing? But I do appreciate the comments, and I always appreciate to learn from listeners as well. All right, well, Linda Holt writes that she loves Johnny Dollar, so we're going to go ahead and get into it. This episode of Johnny Dollar is called The Case of the $100,000 Legs. Now, I should mention that we did have a missing episode in between. The Case of the Foxy Terrier, the eighth episode of the Charles Russell run, is actually missing. So this is the ninth episode, The Case of the $100,000 Legs. We will go ahead and listen, and then we'll come back.
Time now for Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. The next half hour has its baggage packed to take a trip with America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, he's just an expert. At making out his expense account, he's an absolute genius. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, Highworthy Insurance Underwriters Association, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, General Manager Harvey Anthony. Dear Mr. Anthony, here is your problem. The following is an accounting of my expenditures in the case of the $100,000 legs, or who put your company out on the limbs. Expense account, item one, $60. $20 across the board on a losing horse I was rushed into betting on when you had me paged on a public address system at the racetrack.
This is Harvey Anthony, Dollar. Thanks for calling back so soon.
Now, when they paged me, they said it was an emergency. Better be.
Why? What's the matter, Dollar?
This is my day off. And if I know you, this call is going to make it an off day.
If I know you, my friend, you won't mind this assignment. I want you to go out to Hollywood. Act as a bodyguard for a big movie star, Marilyn Major.
Oh, not a bad body to guard. What's the deal?
We've issued one of those publicity policies. Insured her legs for $100,000. Policy will only be in effect for 48 hours. We want you to stick with her. Just see that she doesn't get mixed up in any hockey games.
I get it.
She's been notified, so she expects you.
Now, when do the 48 hours start?
Tomorrow noon. Can you make it?
Now, with the help of American Airlines.
Got enough cash with you to buy your ticket?
About that, I'll know right after the next race. I'll call you from Hollywood. Expense account, item two, $10. Borrowed from a friend. Taxi fare from the racetrack to town, where I cash checked to pay, item three, $186.13. Plane fare, Hartford to Hollywood. Item four, $350. Cab fare, Los Angeles Municipal Airport to the home of the insured, Miss Marilyn Major, at the Horizon View Apartments on the Sunset Strip. Tip the driver, $1. Miss Major's apartment had the best view of the horizon, it being the penthouse. But her outlook was anything but rosy. I found the apartment door open. First I looked in, then I went in. I want to place a person-to-person call, please, to Mr. Harvey Anthony at Hartford, Connecticut. Volunteer 36,000. My name is Dollar, as in blood money. While I was waiting to get Mr. Anthony, I wondered who had got Miss Major. In the movies, I'd always thought she looked right at home anywhere. And now, right there in front of me, she was passing her toughest test. Lying there, nice and relaxed. She looked right at home in the role of the beautiful gal who had just been murdered. Her face was calm. Her legs were neatly placed in the best of cheesecake tradition. The only thing not quite as it should have been was a very real bullet hole, which she was wearing where an earring should have been. But the next cameras that would be taking her picture would be police cameras. B pictures. B for bloody.
Mr. Dollar?
Oh, yeah?
Here's your party. Go ahead.
Oh.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Dollar?
Yeah, this is Dollar, all right. Anthony, first I want to tell you, those legs you insured are still in beautiful shape.
Good, fine.
I only hope you didn't also insure Miss Major's life. She's dead.
What? Marilyn Major dead?
That's right.
Oh, we certainly do insure her life. We only issued that publicity policy on her legs as a courtesy. Dollar, get to work on it right away.
I'll get to work on it, but don't waste too much hope. To me, it looks like your only out is if the policy does not pay off on murder.
Murder? Good heavens. Well, there may be something about the case that'll save us from paying double indemnity for death by violence.
Oh, this is death by violence, brother, any way you look at it. Okay, Anthony, I'll get to work on it right after I call the cops and make a report.
Do your best. Goodbye.
Okay, goodbye.
Hang up that telephone, mister.
The dame standing in the kitchen doorway had .32 caliber steel in her hand to back up the brass in her voice. She was a youngster, but obviously an old-timer at a lot of things. Her hair was the same color as the murdered woman's, smoke blonde, and her dress was tobacco brown, and round and firm and fully packed.
I said, put down that phone.
Yeah, sure, sure, okay. Now, you do me a favor, will you? If you feel you want your finger near that trigger, how about moving it up to the front end of the trigger guard, huh?
Mister, I only heard part of what you said, but you're not calling no police.
What makes you think so?
That dame in there's done me enough harm. I came here to kill her, but somebody beat me to it, and I'm not taking the rap.
Okay, so beat it. Who cares? Then I'll call the police. Somebody's going to eventually.
Before I go, I'm finding a few things and taking them with me. Now, come on, get up on your feet, mister. You're coming with me in the bedroom.
Okay, okay. Don't get excited.
Okay, mister. Over against that wall with your face in close and your hands straight up. Come on, move.
All right. You've learned this at the movies or by watching your friends work.
Don't be a wise guy. I'm not as dumb as I look. Now, hold still.
Look, sister, by this time I shouldn't still like you well enough to warn you, but what you're doing right now will get you in plenty of trouble, even if you didn't commit this murder.
I'll take that chance.
If you don't get picked up for larceny, they'll still get you for tampering with evidence. As far as the police are concerned, at the scene of a murder, nothing gets touched. They like it that way.
What I'm taking won't even be missed. There are plenty more here just like him. That's all she's gotten here. Love letters from men.
Who are you covering up for? Your boyfriend?
It's none of your business, mister, but it's my husband I'm covering up for.
Well, then you're just plain nuts. If he knew her, they'll find that out. And then if they want him, they'll find him.
Yeah, and they'll find her dead.
Huh?
My husband committed suicide over that no good dame this morning.
Oh.
Now, I've had enough out of you. Back up. Two steps.
Okay.
Now, get over there and into that closet. Come on.
Too bad.
What's the matter?
I always feel sorry for a sucker. I felt around in the dark. It was a small closet. That meant not much air. That meant doing something about it. I took my fingernail file, stood it on edge, and slipped it under the door, pressing down the nap of the rug. I did the same with my fountain pen. That would at least allow a small supply of air to sneak into my stuffy little cell. And then I glued my ear to the thin wooden panel that separated me from the bedroom. It wasn't long before my captor apparently completed her search. I heard her pass the closet door and head for the front room. I didn't hear her dial the phone, but it didn't take me long to realize that's what she was doing and who she was calling.
Give me the police. This is an emergency. Hello? Hello, police? I want to report a murder. All right. Hello? There's been a murder. The movie star Marilyn Major in the penthouse. The Horizon View apartment on the Sunset Strip. Never mind who I am. I've caught the murderer. You'll find him locked up in the closet.
From the moment she hung up, I could only guess what was happening. I heard a man's footsteps rush in and then his voice.
Blackmail me, will you, you keep on the phone? That's what I'm paying you for these letters. Now I'm taking them with me.
I didn't think I had the time to spend picking the lock on the closet door, so I started kicking. The girl who had just tried to turn me into the cops was lying on her face in front of the telephone stand, and a covey of bullets had turned the brown silk on her back into wet red lace. She'd been shot in the back, and if she'd succeeded in finding her letters, her killer had taken them with him. I made a quick search myself and took a look for the remaining sets of letters, one from a guy who signed himself Baron, and the other one from a guy whose autograph read, "With all my love, Lawrence." My instincts were trying to pull me out of that apartment, but one look down the street threw them into reverse. Black and white prowl cars were arriving, and it was less than another minute when their passengers started pouring out of the elevator and through the front door.
All right, watch out. I'll pay him. All right, come on. in the bedroom closet, boys. Make sure you don't stand in front of that door.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Never mind the closet, Lieutenant. It's empty. I kicked my way out.
All right, let's see your hands. Get them up.
I swear I'm going to buy some stock in a gun company. Everybody's got them.
Miller, get around behind him. Check him for weapons.
Yes, sir. He's seen, Lieutenant.
Okay. Who are you?
Johnny Dollar. And if you lend me back my right hand, I'll give you my ID. It's in my wallet.
Keep him up. Miller, get his wallet.
Yes, sir. Here it is.
Insurance, Dick, huh?
Please, I'm a freelance special insurance investigator. It sounds better. Keeps my price up.
Hartford, huh? Well, what's your story?
Well, first I'd like to go on record as saying I didn't commit either one of the murders.
Either one? What are you talking about?
Well, this one here is the girl who phoned in the report that brought you here. The one she was talking about, Marilyn Major, is lying just as dead on the floor in the bedroom.
Miller, get in there and take a look.
Yes, sir.
While he's looking, you keep on talking.
Okay, I'll start from the beginning. I was sent out here by Highworthy Insurance. They just issued a policy on the legs of that dame in the other room. $100,000. Publicity stunt. I was supposed to protect their interests.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what do you think? I was supposed to see that she didn't attempt any Hindu fire dances or try walking any tight ropes during the next 48 hours.
Well, your worries are over in that department, at least. What else?
When I got here, the door was open. I walked in and found her. Dead.
Any way to prove that? Any witnesses?
Just one. She's lying there behind her.
Uh-huh. Over the phone, she accused you of the murder. That's the wrong kind of a witness.
No, Lieutenant. The wrong kind of dame. She knew I didn't do it. She was somewhere in this apartment when I arrived.
Then why did you say it?
I can hardly ask her. Listen, Lieutenant. She did tell me that she came here to get some letters. Her husband had written them to the major dame. She said she was trying to protect him.
From what?
Who knows? Maybe she just wanted him arrested in peace. The guy committed suicide this morning.
We can't check your story with him, can we? You've got a lot of dead friends. How did this one here get that way?
I'm not sure. While I was in the closet, I heard her call you. And then a man came in and yelled something about blackmail at her and shot her.
And naturally, he had disappeared by the time you kicked your way out of the closet.
That's right.
This story of yours may win some kind of a prize, Dollar, but not for me. I'm not a judge.
That's one thing in my favor.
Hey, Lieutenant, I got something. The dame is dead, all right. And look what I found in that closet. A fingernail file, a fountain pen with a name on it, Johnny Dollar, and a .32 caliber revolver jammed in a shoe.
Well, Dollar, that combination puts you in a kind of jam, too.
Look, Lieutenant, I think I can make you see things my way if you let me go through my story once more. I was sent out here by Highworthy Insurance Underwriter. Expense account, item 4, $3. Candy, gum, cigarettes, and magazines to make cell number 36, Los Angeles City Jail, less like a no place and more like a home. There's something about a jail door closing on you that sounds very final.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. But first, we want you to know that the biggest jackpot in the history of radio, $50,000, goes in the works tomorrow night when CBS Great Saturday Night Quiz Show Sing It Again comes to you again over most of these same stations. $50,000, $25,000 in marvelous prizes, plus $25,000 in cold, hard cash. And that's only the beginning. Because the longer the phantom voice questions elude the listeners, the higher the rewards go. Be sure you're around tomorrow night when Sing It Again sets telephones ringing across the nation and $50,000 goes riding on each call. And now, back to Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
When I accepted this Hollywood assignment, I visualized spending much of my time gazing upon bars, but not the kind offered by cell number 36. The guy who said stone walls do not a prison make had never been a guest in the Los Angeles City Jail. He had a better chance of getting out of Bartlett's quotations than I had of getting out of there. But as we keep saying in the insurance racket, never say die.
Well, Lieutenant Roach, what are you in for?
I've heard tell the boys around headquarters have a very funny joke about roaches in jails. But that's not why I'm here.
Sit down. Make yourself uncomfortable.
Thanks.
I can't offer you a mint julep. The closest I can come is a spearmint lifesaver.
Oh, thanks. This kind of zero is a pleasure after facing the kind we're up against.
Huh?
So for a dollar, all we've got to go on is you and a mess of evidence we haven't as yet been able to trace down to its rightful owners. Oh, incidentally, about that gun we thought might be yours.
Oh, don't tell me you're going to give it to me. It was a birthday present.
It was the weapon used to kill Marilyn Major, all right. The paraffin test we took on your hands let you out. You haven't been firing any guns lately.
Does that mean you've come here to escort me to the front door?
No, not so fast. We do want to know what your fingerprints were doing all over those two bundles of love letters we found.
I'm going to have to learn to pick things up with my knuckles. Lieutenant, I just had a natural curiosity as to who killed the cat. The only difference between us, Roach, is that your curiosity is official. How far did you get?
Not far enough. Didn't take much figuring to know that Miss Major has been playing a high-class badger game. All the perfume in the joint couldn't cover up the smell of blackmail. On top of that, we found the two batches of letters that you'd been messing around with. One signed Baron, the other signed Lawrence. Those the fire department should be handling.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and remember, there's probably a third set floating around.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm not an eyewitness to this, only an ear witness. But from what I could hear inside that closet, the dame who came there looking for her husband's letters found them. And she called you to turn me in. Mm-hmm. On her way out of the apartment, some guy came in, mistook her for Marilyn Major, and shot her in the back. When I kicked my way out of the closet, those letters of hers were gone. So, figures the murderer grabbed the letters out of her hand, thinking there was some he'd written.
Uh-huh. Then in your file, the killer was either that Baron fellow or the other one, Lawrence.
Lieutenant, in my file, they're both murderers. It's just a question of who killed whom. The guy who killed Marilyn Major certainly wouldn't have come back to kill her again, would he?
In this town, you never know.
Look, Lieutenant, I got a two-way stake in this thing. One to get my name cleared, the other to get my job done. And I'm in a hurry. I imagine you are, too.
Well, Marilyn Major was a big name. That means we'll soon have newspapers burning under our seats. We're in a hurry, all right.
Okay, then listen. If I were either one of those murderers, and I know that the police probably had a handful of letters that could send me to the gas chamber, I'd head for the border.
Yeah?
But if I thought an outsider had them, somebody they might be able to buy off or scare off or beat off, then I'd go find that guy.
Well?
Let's bring this thing to a head in a hurry. Run a story in the papers. Tell them you released me. Tell them I escaped. Tell them anything. Just so long as you tell them that you suspect that I have those letters hidden someplace.
Well, if you don't mind taking the chance of having two murderers gunning after you, we certainly don't.
Oh, I mind. Believe me, I'm not doing you any favors. It's just that I'll feel safer in my own hands.
Okay, Mr. Pigeon, you've got yourself elected. We'll publish that story. Then we'll let you fly the coop.
Good enough. Just make sure that you give me plenty of fighter cover. Expense account, item 6, 7 cents. Purchase of newspaper, an extra edition that hit the street about a half an hour before I did. Item 7, $5. A big square meal to make up for the ones I'd missed, ignoring the little round beans while a guest of the city. Seeing the lieutenant's fiction in black print on the front page of a newspaper almost had me believing it. There was my picture, big as life. And when those birds set up a pigeon, they made sure everybody would know the location of his roost. Firmly planted high in the story was the name of the hotel into which they had registered me, and to which I was under orders to proceed immediately. As I walked down the hotel corridor to my room, I felt an icy chill and a flight of goose flesh headed south down my spine.
Come in, darling, and close that door.
Oh, you respected company, but not your kind. At first, I thought I'd gotten into the wrong room. This kid looked right at home. And she used some of the clothes from a half-packed overnight bag to make her look it.
So you're Johnny Dillon.
Yeah. Thanks for saving me a calling card. Who are you?
Alice Hill.
That doesn't mean anything.
Otherwise known as Mrs. Lawrence Hill.
Oh, Lawrence. Oh, the last time I saw that name, it said, with love. But not to you.
That's why I'm here. I want those letters.
Why aren't you carrying a gun?
It'll be here if we need it.
We?
Yes. My husband's down in the lobby. Look, if you give me those letters he wrote, I'll pack up my little bag and leave, and everybody will be very happy.
Yeah? I think I know the next line, but go ahead.
I hope you keep on being that smart. My husband was watching for you when you came in, so he knows you're up here. Naturally, he knows I'm here, and he's on his way up. We want this.
This isn't just a Badger game. This is the World Series. If I don't give you the letters, your husband busts in here, shoots me, and I get written off under the unwritten law. Neat, neat, neat.
It's a handy law.
You're right. It's covered a multitude of sins.
Where are the letters?
Where's your husband?
What's the matter with you? What do those letters mean to you?
Well, right now, they look like my only hold on the future, Mrs. Hill. How do I know that you and your dear Lawrence won't kill me after you get them? Do you want me to take your word for it?
Well, I'll have to trust Lawrence. He'll know what to do.
I already know. There's nothing else for him to do. Look, Mrs. Hill, why don't you wise up? Your husband is ready to commit one murder to remove the evident motive for another. And he's dragging you into this with him. You'll wind up an accessory before, after, and during the... You're running up a blind alley as fast as you can run.
And it's too late to turn around, so I'll just have to keep running.
Ah, well, here he is. Lace up your track shoes, lady. The race is on. Come in.
All right, sit still. Freeze, both of you.
It's okay, Alice. You can hold off on the dog and pony show. Save it for the witnesses when they arrive. Don't waste it on Lawrence and me.
That isn't Lawrence.
What? Oh, so this must be Barron.
You all through?
That depends on that gun in your hand.
Where are the letters?
Letters, letters, letters. Yeah, I'm beginning to feel like a mailman when he's late getting out in the morning. There's one thing I want to know. Where did an ugly part-time Romeo like you find all those pretty words you wrote?
Look, don't get me sore. I'll blast your letters or no letters.
Ah, that's the tone I was trying to bring your voice up to, Mr. Barron. No letters is exactly what I've got to offer.
He's lying. He admitted to me that he has them. He's trying to blackmail you, Barron. That's what he's doing.
Who are you?
Never mind. My husband's in the same boat you are.
I read the papers. Lawrence, huh?
That's right. He'll be here any second. Between us, we'll figure out something.
Now, stay away from it, darling.
I'll answer it.
Yeah, good idea. If a man answers, hang up. It'll be Lieutenant Roach.
Wait a minute. Okay, answer it, Dollar. But the first wrong word fires this gun.
Oh, you can believe me. Nothing but right words are on the tip of my tongue. Hello? Whoever was on the other end of the line decided not to talk and hung up. So I started an imaginary conversation with Lieutenant Roach of Homicide. While I was talking, I was thinking. Barron's voice was the voice I'd heard when I was locked in the closet. That made him the guy who shot the girl who turned me in. By the process of elimination, Lawrence Hill was elected murderer of Marilyn Major. During my talk, which made no sense, and my thoughts, which made plenty of sense, I was checking the length of cord on the phone. I needed Barron a little closer, so I started tossing enough dangerous words into the mouthpiece to draw him closer, threatening me with his mutters, his looks, and his gun. He moved into range, and I moved into action. I heaved the base of the telephone straight into his face. I moved in with my knee right after it. Stumbled back, letting go of the gun, which I kicked under the bed. Then I made a break front out of the dresser next to the bed, using his head to break the front. The water from the cracked-up pitcher hit him in the face, but it didn't do him any good. Hey, get out from underneath there. Get away from that gun. Come on. While I got a hold of your ankle, I got a good mind to do this thing right and heave you out the window.
Let me. Let go of me.
Come on now, stand up.
You. All right, how much do you want? We don't want any trouble. Just let me out of here. We'll pay you anything. My husband's an important man.
So am I. I've had all the pushing around I'm going to take. From now on, I'm the dealer, and your hand is to shut up.
All I want to do is get out of here.
Oh, no, you don't. I baited you. You tried to bait me. Now we'll both sit here and bait your husband. It must have been him that called this room and hung up when he heard my voice. One thing I didn't bother to tell you. Your husband couldn't have known I was up here until then, because I came in the hotel the back way and came up here the back way, elevator and all.
What do you mean? You baited me.
Well, why do you think the police put my name, my address, and my picture in the newspapers? To draw autograph owners?
Oh.
Oh is right. Now get over there in the corner while I retrieve Mr. Barron's gun from under the bed before some mouse crawls out of the woodwork and tries taking a shot at me. Go on, get going. Turn around. Okay. Now, if you don't want me shooting runs in your stocking, don't make a move while I'm under the bed. I feel like something that old maids hope for.
Lawrence!
Where is he?
On the floor. He's got a gun. Shoot him! Kill him! Under the bed! No, no, Lawrence! Not him! Lawrence! Under the bed!
Under the bed? I'm taking no chances. Listen, Roach, you may be a lieutenant to the police department, but to me, you're just a big, fat private.
Now, now, calm down, darling.
I don't mind setting myself up as a pigeon, but you promised me protection. Where was it?
Temper, temper. Now, who's who here? Let's get these stiffs sorted out, then we can talk.
There's only one stiff. The other one, the one near the door, is Lawrence. He's only wounded. I had to shoot his pins out from under him. He came crashing in and killed Barron by mistake. That's Barron over there by the bed.
Ah, another case of mistaken identity? How did he miss you?
I happened to be under the bed at the time.
Oh.
And I wasn't hiding.
No?
I was looking for a gun, and I found it, and I used it. If I had one right now, I'm not so sure I wouldn't use it on you. You still haven't told me why you left me here alone, holding the sack all this time.
I'll tell you why. And I guess it was our fault. The men I had posted in the lobby didn't see you come into the hotel.
Well, how do you like that? Johnny Dollar. Wise guy.
Huh?
Lieutenant, I got some news for you. Just to make sure I was taking no chances, I came in the back way. Expense account, item 8, $62. Hollywood Entertainment. Seeing what there is to see at Spiro's. Item 9, $105. Seeing to it that one of the things I saw at Ciro's had a good time with me at the Mocambo. Item 10, $186.13. Plane fare, Hollywood back to Hartford. Item 11, $1. Ticket to the movies, back in Hartford, to study the last motion picture of Marilyn Major, so that in the future I'd be sure to steer clear of her kind of a woman, who is too much of a jinx for my kind of man. Expense account total, $948.76. Signed, yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
In keeping with the Easter season, you'll hear a different kind of story on CBS Gangbusters tomorrow night. The authentic story of a former gangster's fight to go straight, broadcast in cooperation with outstanding parole authorities. You'll find this Easter Eve Gangbusters drama as gripping as any program CBS has ever brought to you. Tomorrow night, you'll also find a mid-April adventure with the intriguing title The Heat Wave on CBS Philip Marlowe program. Gangbusters and The Adventures of Philip Marlowe are regular Saturday night features on most of these same CBS stations. Listen in again next week when CBS brings you Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, with Charles Russell as Johnny. Written by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd, with music by Mark Warnow, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar is produced and directed by Richard Sandville for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Welcome back. You know, it's interesting, as always, we note the cost of the plane ticket. $186.13, a one-way ticket from Hartford to Hollywood. Well, I do want to let you know about Johnny Dollar Air, where you can get the best deals on airline travel. And you can name your own price or choose from published fares, because it's also, it's Priceline.com. And off of Priceline, I got $169. Now, of course, remember, $186.13 was actually about $1,302.91 in today's dollars. So that was an expensive trip from Hollywood to Hartford. All right, well, and remember, JohnnyDollarAir.com. In regards to the show itself, it was kind of interesting. In one way, it was reminiscent of Pat Novak, you know, the private detective gets accused by the police of murder. Of course, there were some differences. Mainly, it was nice to see him remain conscious throughout the whole event. It was a pretty good episode. There were a couple things. I have to say that when they got into the gunfight in the hotel room, when he was firing under the bed, I just totally lost track of it. It went too fast for my mental camera to keep up, I guess. I also have to say it was weird to have him actually trying to get tough with the police and threaten them with assault with a deadly weapon. I don't think I would recommend that, regardless of which dollar Johnny Dollar incarnation you happen to have. Another nice Charles Russell episode in the books. So we move on to some other comments. We got some off Podcast Alley, and remember, please go and cast your vote at Podcast Alley. You can leave a comment if you'd like, but the votes are appreciated just as well. Dear Adam, I want to thank you for the trips down memory lane. I enjoy them immensely, writes Carson Holmes. And everything about Great Detectives is outstanding, including Adam's idiosyncratic yet informative comments. I've got to use that with the Everyday Man commentary. Oh, one other thing on the show, before I move on to a comment, was this idea of insuring lakes. The practice that they're actually, that the whole episode was based on, was based on a practice that began with 1940 with Betty Garble insuring her lakes. Now, leg insurance is actually still bought by celebrities today. You purchase it through Lloyd's of London, which was ironic because that was an original tie-in to the character's name before they chose Johnny Dollar. But some of the celebrities that have got their legs insured since Betty Grable started it. Jamie Lee Curtis, Angie Dickinson, Mary Hart of Entertainment Tonight, Angie Everhart, Marlene Dietrich, Brooke Shields, Tina Turner, and actually the closed show live, the catwalk models, basically insisted on $50,000 in insurance on their legs before they go out wearing 6-inch high heels. Some men who've gotten it insured, and I think for pretty sensible reasons. Fred Astaire, $75,000 per leg. Michael Flatley of Riverdance, $40 million. And David Beckham, the English soccer player, has his legs insured for $70 million. And I think all of those are pretty understandable. Some of the women, I have to say, I'm not certain I see Mary Hart insuring her legs. That's kind of, or Brooke Shields for that matter. But Astaire, Flatley, Beckham, yeah, absolutely, and some of the dancers, absolutely, I can see that because anything can happen. Jamie Lee Curtis, one of the things I found, she actually got it insured while doing an ad for stockings. I generally don't think wearing stockings would be that big of a threat to your legs. But anyway, we got one more comment here before we end the show for this week. Jesse writes, I love both your Dragnet show and your Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. I've been listening to both since the beginning, and I really enjoy them both. There is only one thing that I dislike. That is the Sherlock Holmes podcast. I am a Sherlock Holmes purist, and I dislike the portrayal that all the actors, excepting Basil Rathbone, who did an excellent job. Well, I definitely appreciate that. I think that, and one thing I found with these shows, we often will say, you know, the whole series of episodes, like the Sherlock Holmes series, when there were multiple series and multiple actors, and some of them weren't particularly good. So I will definitely take a look. I think we'll definitely play more than the Rathbone series, which we're going to be doing for about a year. And I hope everybody enjoyed getting to hear Basil Rathbone this week. But there may be some actors that are just a little bit off. And I heard one version. I'm not going to say which one because I haven't rendered final judgment, where it was just really flat. There may be some that we don't end up doing. But he writes, on a more upbeat note, I'm looking forward greatly to the app. My suggestion for the app would definitely be to have videos. Do not like the idea of reading books on my iPod. If you want to read Sherlock Holmes, then get the book. And I understand the point on that. The Kindle, they've actually designed it so you can read on the iPhone. So there are some people doing it. I'm not going to do it with the Sherlock Holmes story because I've looked into it a little further, and some of the Sherlock Holmes stories are actually under copyright in the United States. The book form is. So I wouldn't even want to mess with it. But I've not heard anybody actually say they wanted that feature. He said, also, I have a suggestion for when the shows reaches the end. Three shows that I greatly enjoy are The Shadow, Candy Matson, and Richard Diamond. Well, Candy Matson and Richard Diamond, absolutely, definitely. Richard Diamond, it'll be a few years. Candy Matson, you'll hear probably a little bit sooner. I'm thinking right after we do Richard Rogue, which was Dick Powell's prior series, and we do the Poirot series, then we'll do Candy Matson. So Candy Matson is definitely going to happen. The Shadow doesn't really fit with all the other detective shows. I think some of the later episodes, the ones with actors other than Wells, may Orson Welles tend to fit more into the detective genre. But it's really, I think, something different. I would need some different kind of podcasting. I definitely don't want to run any shorter of brain power. And by the way, I will be getting my own iPod, finally joining the iPod revolution. Pod person just bought it off of Amazon. So waiting for that to get there, so I can kind of see how this app is going to work firsthand. I told my wife, it's research. All right, well, that'll bring it to an end. Got any comments, send them my way, box13@greatdetectives.net. Also, please cast your vote for us at Podcast Alley, podcastalley.greatdetectives.net. Final programming note I should add before we sign off. This is actually the last show I'm recording for the year. So if you leave any comments between December 13th and the end of the year, those will all be on next year's show. So be aware, we're getting them, and we will get to them. But we already recorded the Christmas episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, which will be next week. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.